The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Expanse fans, welcome to episode 10 of The Churn, episode 11 of The Expanse, Here There Be Dragons. I'm Cher Martinetti.
Joining you as always, Adam Swiderski, Flightless Butterfly. That's right.
And of course, joining us is going to be Ty and Daniel to break down this latest episode. And our special guest today is Naureen Shankar, the showrunner for The Expanse.
Woo.
Woo. If you're listening on iTunes or Google Play or wherever you listen, make sure to drop by, give us some love. And of course, if you are watching the show and have not read the books yet, you could always pick them up. They're available on Orbit Books. Pick them up on jamessacorey.com or online or your local independent bookstore. So in this episode, we have Holden leading Prax and crew to find Prax's daughter. They do make a startling discovery, which fortunately is not his daughter.
That's right.
Right.
But it's somebody's daughter.
It's somebody's daughter.
Yeah,
but,
or her son.
But the unfortunate thing is they're also discovering that there's a lot more going on with this protomolecule than they initially expected. And somebody is not too happy about how close they're getting to finding out exactly what it is that's going on.
Yep.
We also have Bobby finally
going rogue
and throwing some very impressive punches.
Yeah, man, that
this
was great
episode. And finding out a little bit more of the truth herself with what's going on with the protomolecule. So both these teams are on different paths, but they're both kind of coming to the truth about this protomolecule situation, or different truths about the protomolecule situation.
I just feel
situation.
Like the hideous, murderous, blue glowing cat is out of the bag.
Yes.
At this point.
And we also had a very emotional, I don't want to say a breakup, because it wasn't a breakup, but Naomi and Holden decide that they have two separate journeys now that they have to go on.
The fellowship is broken.
Yes.
That's what it reminded me of.
The fellowship is broken.
Yeah.
What was your favorite part of the episode?
Oh, gosh. I was glad. I loved seeing Bobby beat the crap out of Martins. That was a long time coming. And of course, Frankie knows how to throw a punch, which is always, that's been my big complaint a lot of times about, people who do action scenes on TV, is that you can tell they don't really, know what they're doing. Sarah Michelle Gellar, but Frankie Adams obviously knows how to throw a punch very well. I thought all of it was cool. I loved Alex. We didn't mention Alex's smooth maneuver using the moons of Jupiter to navigate to Ganymede and, getting a little too intimate with the Rossi, mentally speaking, emotionally speaking.
They
perhaps
have a very special relationship.
They do.
Which
this
captain,
is what happens when you're stranded on a ship,
right,
for a while by
but
yourself.
But would a pilot and there's a ship typically, I don't know if it'd be that special, but they're just pretty special.
It was very special. That's why I'm putting it. So that stuff was all cool. And I'm glad to see Vassarala and Bobby together. That I look forward to seeing where that relationship goes, for sure.
I have to say, this episode, what I noticed about the tone of it is that this felt a little bit more like a science fiction horror to me, this episode. Like, it had that feeling of like an Aliens, when you know something's out there and they know something's out there.
Yeah.
And that something is like,
let me
on
say,
the loose.
Yeah, that was, no, actually, I want to walk everything back I just said, because those were all good scenes, but my favorite moment of the episode was when you have the bit where, I guess, Strickland's assistant or somebody throws a grenade through the door. They're all, you know,
and
she
and
her team break it back. Amos throws it back, and they're all standing there at the door waiting for something to happen, and all you hear is, like, screaming and chaos.
Yeah.
And then quiet. And just that moment of just, what the hell is going on over there?
But that's why, to me, this episode, and I really like how you can feel the different elements of the books, because I know that, You know, a lot of people say how it's a noir, it's a space opera, it's got all these different elements, and you definitely feel them at different times in the season.
Yeah.
But it's still, they're all cohesive and they work together, but you can definitely feel that influence. So this to me felt a little bit like an Alien-esque type episode where there's something out there and it's out on the loose and like, oh shit, now what? And also the whole part with Prax's daughter, May, mm-hmm. and the doctor was incredibly creepy.
Yes.
Like that was where I started getting that uneasy feeling this episode, and it just continued from that point on.
Because the creepiest thing is a guy who's, you know, smiling and being nice to you while he's leading you to some horrible fate. I mean, that's exactly what Strickland is. Yeah. You know, you can see he's charming and he knows how to handle kids and everything. But man,
he's like grooming her.
Yeah,
it's really, really creepy. And so was the whole part when they walk into that room and you see all the kids strapped into these like gurneys. It kind of reminded me, actually, the way they're strapped in of the scene in Tommy when he goes into the thing and then like Tina Turner pushes all the needles into him.
Oh, the Iron Maiden.
Yes.
Yes.
It reminded me of that. But sans the needles and Tina Turner.
Right.
Ty and Daniel, how are you doing?
It's been a weird week. Things are good. We are actually coming to you today from the writer's room of season 3. So that's kind of cool.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
So is it weird for you to like be kind of straddling two seasons right now? Because we're talking about this and we're still in season 2, but like you're starting to dip into season 3.
Oh, it's much worse than that. We're working on book 7.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah.
So you're literally living 3 alternate timelines right now.
It's like a Vonnegut novel.
Yeah.
We're very 12 Famidorian, but yeah.
No wonder you're sick. So what did you enjoy watching this episode play out on the screen?
So I gotta say, but my favorite thing about this episode is all the stuff I know from behind the scenes, because you were talking about how much fun it was to watch Bobby beat the crap out of Martins finally. I was there the day they were doing that, and there is amazing behind the scenes stories about that sequence that I should probably tell, because they're too cool not to tell.
So tell.
Go.
Spill, Mysterio.
All right. So when Bobby punches Martins in the throat, the way that they shoot that is you sort of mime doing it, and it, rather than your hand hitting the person's throat, you just sort of like let the flat of your palm hit their chest. So it still creates like a little bit of an impact, but of course doesn't like, you know, damage the person's throat and make them not able to do the scene again. The first time they did that, Frankie threw that shot and hit Martins in the chest with the flat of her hand, and it sounded like somebody had snapped a 2x4. There was dead silence on the set. People were like, oh my God, is he okay? like it sounded like she had shattered his breastbone.
I was actually going to ask if she was capable of holding her punches, because I know
she is. She is capable, but in that one, it went just a little too hard, and she really tagged him. Now, to be fair, the actor who plays Martins is an old pro, and he was totally fine. He was like, no, I'm good. It's totally fine. And sort of walked it off. But yeah, it was loud enough that everybody on set just stopped. People were like, Jesus Christ, did she just kill that dude? Did she just like heart punch him?
Yeah, there's a spot on the chest too where if you hit somebody, it's because of the resonance of the chest cavity, it just sounds like really a lot bigger than it actually is. So
right, yeah. So that was fun. That was the first time we'd actually seen sort of Frankie Bobby unleash on somebody, and it was a little intimidating. The other thing that happened is you'll notice there's a scene where she grabs Martins and she throws him up against the TV and the TV breaks. So of course we had a stunt TV. You know, we had the one that is designed to shatter. And then the way you shoot it is you put the real one that has a picture on it on the wall, and then you sort of mime throwing the person up against it, and then you switch it out and put the fake TV in. And if it's going to be really hard, you might even switch actors to stunt actors and all that stuff. So we did the first pass of it where Frankie's supposed to grab him and mime throwing him up against the TV before we switch them out. And she actually threw him against the TV so hard that that TV breaking is real. She actually destroyed that TV.
I was wondering about that because we were looking at the network cut and everything, and I was like, wow, that TV just broke.
Yes. Yeah, that was not intentional.
I honestly thought watching it that I thought she legitimately hit him in the jaw a couple of times. That's why I was like, is she like actually tagging him a little bit?
Yeah. So the people who aren't sure if Frankie is big and physical enough for that part, those people are crazy, because even at like 10% speed, when she's trying not to hurt anybody, she's just wrecking the set.
Yeah. They should cast her as She-Hulk.
They should cast her as She-Hulk. That would be good.
That would be amazing.
Get Kevin Feige on the horn.
Okay. Right, I'm now putting it out there into the universe. Let's get Frankie into a Marvel movie. She should definitely be playing a superhero.
Yeah.
I'm into it.
I enjoyed that very much. I enjoyed watching Bobby go rogue finally and just have no more F's left to give. And and Martin's had it coming. Really?
Yeah.
He really did.
He really did.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because while I was watching this episode, I noticed that the way he's talking to her and how he's pretty much just the lying and the manipulation and the gaslighting that's happening. And even in that moment, and again, and I know we say this all the time, like, yes, this was written a couple years ago, like this book, or years ago, but it's so reminiscent.
Some things are evergreen.
I was going to say, there's certainly historical precedent for that as well, beyond where we are now.
But and
really just talking down to women. That just goes on.
Yeah, that never happens. What are you guys talking about?
Yeah. It was not written before Twitter.
This episode is the demonstration that gaslighting Frankie is a bad idea.
Yeah.
Lesson learned there.
And if only that lesson could be applied to all. So something I noticed, and I actually remarked about this to Adam on the way here, that I noticed that, like, I know that Holden and Naomi's relationship is obviously serious. They're in love with each other. But do you feel like, because he had told me that in the books, there's obviously more time spent on their relationship developing. Do you feel that, obviously, because of time constraints and there's so much story to tell, that do you wish at any time there was a little more time spent on developing their relationship? Or is that something that's going to be coming in later, like in season 3, or we're going to see a little bit more of the development of that relationship? Because he said it does play a pretty important part in the...
Well, I think you're seeing it develop right now. I mean, they're doing this thing where they're on a divergent path and they're figuring out who they are to each other. And I mean, we're not in one of the phases where it's comfortable and fun, but I don't think you can say it's not, you know, front and center for them.
Yeah, I seem to remember, and I may be remembering this wrong, that we, and again, you know, partially this is by virtue of the books being at least partially told through Holden's POV, but there were more like bunk scenes or things like that where they're just kind of having a conversation about what's going on at this point in the story. And I'm not sure if I'm remembering that right, actually.
So you might have just lied to me. All right, cool.
Well, there's certainly more time in a novel than you have in an hour of TV for those quieter moments. And, you know, we've had a couple of the quiet moments, and we'll hopefully have some more moments with them later on, provided they don't all die in the next episode. But you never know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Spoilers.
Season 3 is an entirely new cast of characters.
Season 3 is just everybody who inherits the Rocinante. That's what happens.
Talk about changing shit up from the books, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
They're all going to be raccoons.
But there was something else actually changed from the books this episode, which was they didn't encounter... In the books, they encounter that squad of... I can't remember the name. I want to say Pinkertons, but that's not... That's a different...
Pinkwater,
thank you. Which
which is a combination of Pinkerton and Blackwater.
Right,
it's,
yes, of course.
Pinkwater.
Yeah. So they encounter those people on Ganymede, and that was cut from this, I believe.
Yeah, I just didn't have time to do that. It was it's a bit of a, in the books, you know, it sets up some other things, but it is a bit of a digression from the straight path through the station. And just the episode didn't have enough time to support adding a whole nother set of characters that we had to introduce, and it just wasn't time for it.
So speaking of spoilers, or speaking of things from the books, we learned this episode that Naomi has a kid.
Yeah, it's the first time it's explicitly stated in the show so far. Yeah.
So, but we don't get the whole backstory to that.
No.
So, is that something we're going to hear more about this season? Are we going to hear more about that next season?
Not a bunch this season, but it is something that, you know, it obviously is a thing that is part of her character, that as the show goes on, there's going to be more conversation about that and more reveals.
Don't ask these guys. They don't know anything.
Yeah. So that whiny, petulant voice you just heard was Naren Shankar, our showrunner.
So I guess, hi.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm not as good as you guys are. You sound like you're kind of having a party while Daniel's dying.
Well, that's part of the party.
Well, that's nice.
That's the reason.
They've got a whole second line planned and everything. It's going to be great.
So you can just go ahead and like hop into this conversation. We're talking about, you know, obviously Naomi's revelation that she has a child. Now, did she have one kid in the books too? Or
I'm not saying anything because I don't want to spoil anything to anyone.
Okay.
Yeah, but we don't want it. That's future spoilers. It's okay to spoil things in 11 since everybody will have seen that. But,
right. Okay. So
anything beyond that, we're gonna leave that alone.
Okay. So I'm not gonna get an answer on that, and we're gonna find out more potentially about what that situation is next season.
Yeah, and obviously that's something Holden doesn't know yet at this point.
As the show goes on, I'm certain that will come up.
So, but it was, I mean, that was definitely a bonding moment with her and Prax.
Yeah.
And it almost, I feel like her revealing that this episode also kind of, it makes sense that she makes the decision that she makes, that like, I have to get as many people as I can out of here before something happens to them.
Well, and she's, you know, she's the counter to Holden's Ahab side, which is obviously taking over at this point of he's got his white whale of the protomolecule and he's going to go after it no matter what. And so she's meant to, there's a certain point, I guess, where she's just like, I can't be that anchor for you entirely. I have to do my own thing, you know?
Yeah. Naren, what's been your favorite part of this episode?
This is 11.
Episode 11.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or as I like to call it, hear ye be dragons, because apparently
hear ye be dragons. You know, I have to say I do enjoy the Arbogast storyline quite a bit. It's one of those things, you know, we were talking about initially in the room, and it was one of the places that we knew was going to be a pivotal storyline for the season. So it's been kind of fun seeing that play out. I mean, you know, you met Colonel Janice in episode 6, and I'm sorry, in episode 5. And then you met Dr. Turby in episode 6 with the Vassarala, and now they've been together in 9, and now they're continuing to explore. And it's sort of this interesting bonding experience with these two guys who are on very different sides of the fence scientifically, and sort of seeing them come together as they discover a little bit more what's going on in the Eros crater on Venus. It is, and it's also just kind of fun to look at too. The ship is very different, you know, getting into the planet that's, you know, another planet and seeing sort of what's down there is kind of cool. The probes are neat. It's I've got kind of a fun retro look, I think, that's very different than the rest of the show.
And it's a neat addition, I think, from the books in terms of the amount of detail we're getting into and how that's being drawn out, discovering what's going on Venus. It's creating an air of mystery that, you know, kind of deepens that experience of finding out what happened with Eros.
Very, very much so. And that was one of the choices, too, was that in the book, it's a little bit more of an open secret what's happening on Venus. It's like people are studying and it's kind of in the background. And we decided to make it a little bit more hidden and also focus in on the personalities on the ship a little bit more, because it was an opportunity really to talk about some of the larger philosophical elements that were going on, that all of this stuff raised. And that's really what we're using it for more than anything.
I was hearkening back to an episode of this podcast where we talked about Terry Chen and the fact that he's previously played gangsters a lot. So it was very enjoyable for me to watch the scene where he's like, what is this gun and how do I use it? You know, that's
he knows already.
Yeah. That's a very meta experience given knowing Terry Chen's filmography, but still it was a neat little nod there.
And then he points it at people and gets a whole lot of people shot.
Right. Exactly.
He's like the Mary Sue of the episode.
What do you mean?
Because he's like, doesn't know how to use a gun. And then he picks it up and he like can hit everybody. So he's a Mary Sue.
No, he didn't hit anybody.
No, no, he doesn't hit anybody. No. Oh, he just points it at somebody. He never pulls the trigger. Everybody else starts shooting. And all he does is get tackled by Amos and get Amos shot.
Yeah. Why is he always the one who gets
shot? So speaking of, I thought about this. I am so mad at myself and I hate that I'm admitting that I thought about this. But I know that, you know, Adam's constructing his perfect man.
True.
So, and I think that Amos's arms.
I said that.
Yeah.
We said Amos's guns. Yeah.
Okay. Because I didn't remember that Amos's guns were mentioned.
Yeah.
So far, Adam's perfect man is Steven's abs, Amos's arms, and Terry's eyes.
And Aaron Wright's hair.
And Aaron Wright's hair.
And Aaron Wright's hair.
Yeah.
And
it's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, so far so good.
Notice that there's nothing from Alex in that perfect man.
Well.
His beard is immaculately groomed.
He has a spectacular beard.
That's true. There you go.
Like a beardy man.
Man, this is a...
Or his lasagna making.
I was just going to say his cooking ability.
Yeah.
His cooking ability. But then I noticed that we had space pizza in this episode.
We did have space pizza.
That might have to be the next.
I got to tell you, though, if I could pick anybody's hair, I would take Frankie's hair. Frankie has the most amazing hair.
She does. Yeah. I have hair. You know what, though? I got to be honest. Shirai's hair is pretty amazing, too.
It is.
The cool
it
part is. About Frankie's is that it tells a completely different story if it's down or up.
Well, that's kind of how hair works.
That's correct.
That's kind of, that's how hair works, buddy.
See? All right. Well, there you go.
It was very deliberate. When she goes into talk to Martin, it's the reason she puts it back up military style. She wants to, at least momentarily, appear like she's going to be a good soldier again.
Well, and she needs to keep it out of her face for when she's whooping ass. Exactly.
Right, of course. Yeah.
It does two things.
I'm interested in seeing the team up of Vassarella and Bobby play out because they're both such alpha females.
Yeah.
And it seems like Bobby's just like, she's throwing that whole, you know, follow the orders bit soldier behind her. And it doesn't seem like she's really looking to take orders from anyone anymore. So I don't know how that's going to play between those two.
Well, and Cotillard too. I mean, because he's such a, there's like, we've talked about how he's kind of amalgamating a couple characters within himself and, you know, he's more prominent here as Vassarala's body man kind of than he was in the book. So seeing how, you know, how Bobby's going to play in that dynamic.
Well, one of my favorite moments of this episode is when he was looking at her and she goes, "What the fuck are you looking at?" And I was like, I've never crushed harder on her than I was in that moment. That was amazing. She was like my spirit animal.
She may have switched sides, but she's definitely not backing down from anyone.
No. So, Noreen, I had mentioned how, you know, the book's having this noir element to it and the science fiction element to it and the space opera element to it and how in this season especially, you're feeling the differences of those elements in a lot of the episodes. I feel like the first part of the season definitely was that detective noir feel because, you know, Miller's story is very much that. And I said how this episode felt very much almost like a science fiction horror. Because it had some of those scary elements to it. It wasn't like a full-on horror, but it reminded me a lot of Aliens, where you know there's this thing out there, and now it's on the loose, and you hear it on the other side of the door, and the screaming, and then you see it broke out of whatever its container or containment thing was. How, for you as a showrunner, how have you been working to try to pull those elements out and let them like shine on their own?
You know, the novels are really good guides, like, you know, for what you're talking about. As you said, you know, the noirish element was really strongly attached to Miller. So it's just a natural outgrowth of the fact that, you know, he's no longer with the show. The tones that we're talking about are all in the book. I mean, that moment where you're hearing behind the door what's going on, that's all in the novel. And so I think that what, at least, you know, as a reader, when I got to the material, it's like you see these different strains sort of kind of coming in and out, and we're kind of following along with it, to a pretty, I think, reasonably close and particularly close in spirit. So these are just things that naturally emerge, and I'm a big believer in, you know, the story kind of finds itself, and each one of these things sets a tone, and you have an overall tone that knits them together. But the little ebbs and flows of these things are, you know, just a natural outgrowth. It's like this is a story about, you know, a kid being being taken down into the catacombs and being strapped into a seat and turned into a monster and maybe dead. That's a horror movie, you know, and it's called Here There Be, you know, Here There Be Dragons, and because it's about monsters. And the whole episode is, in one way or another.
That was a very, I love the moment at the end too with Holden, we're going hunting. It was like, yeah, this is just like Predator.
Oh my God.
And that turned out so well for everyone involved.
Yeah, exactly.
Indeed. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's not a chopper to be found anywhere. I don't know what they're going
to
do.
Well, actually, you should also compare it to Rambo, because Stephen would be very happy to know that he's invoking anything Sylvester Stallone.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right.
So somebody actually, I made a comment a couple weeks ago on Twitter about how I was watching Demolition Man. And I was like, was there like a clause in every single Sylvester Stallone contract that he had to have his shirt off for at least 70% of the movie?
Probably.
And like that he put in there. And somebody tweeted me like he was like an early Stephen Street. And I had to take a picture of that tweet so I could show it to him next time. Like I interview him because that will make his life, because he's slightly obsessed.
So
with
is
Sylvester
that
Stallone.
When you guys were casting Stephen, where you're like, wow, we're looking at a young Sylvester Stallone.
I don't know that he's like a young Stallone, but like, you know, you could understand what he's saying when he speaks.
Ironically, Wes Chatham is doing a movie right now with Sylvester Stallone.
That's amazing.
That is true.
It all comes full circle.
That's fantastic. Do you have any questions from Reddit?
Yes, I do. Narain? We have some people who have submitted questions from our Reddit thread today for Narain. One in particular was about kind of how the show gets plotted out in terms of material from the books, new material, like as you're laying things out, how and where do you decide to add to what's there from the books versus just telling the story that's in the book straight?
It's an interesting question. I don't know if there's a simple answer to that. We were actually having a discussion in the writer's room about this yesterday about different processes. It's like, because Ty and Daniel were saying that they always need to know exactly where the end is, and they kind of work backwards from that. And my story process in the room is to never really settle necessarily on where I'm going and just try to kind of figure out what happens next. Because I try not to write to a result. But I think the way it's emerged on this show is you read the material so you understand the big moves of the story. And you understand where it's going in a large sense. Then in the micro of it, that's where I think we have the departures. I think that's where we've been able to bring in and adapt the novellas, change some of the character dynamics, change some of the emotional arcs, but in a way that doesn't ever break the continuity of the overall story. And that's always when tired Daniel will say, well, if we do that stupid idea, then you're going to break all of book six. And we go, okay, maybe we shouldn't do that. And that's sort of how we stay on target. But I think overall, it's been a pretty organic process. You just kind of find it as you're going. Once you understand the framework and you kind of start drilling into it, I think that's the departures happen on a more local level, I would say.
Now, he's not telling you the story. On the very first day of the writing room, we had barely met each other. He brought in copies of all of our books, burned them in front of us, threw the ashes in our faces, and said, your books are dead.
What I actually said was, this may have been very close to the first thing I said, was I said, listen, obviously, you know, television and novels are very different things. I said, what I would like to do is the characters that you have essentially on page one of your book, I'd like our people to become them somewhere in season three. There was such a natural set up in the book that you had when the Canterbury exploded, you had characters that, you know, were thrown together kind of against their will. And it was such a natural thing to have them not know each other, not know their backstories, and over the course of the series, really learn who each person was. And so that was a significant departure from the book, because initially everybody kind of knows everybody else's deal. And so that's how we proceeded. And that was really the way it kind of all started. And from that, as we go, it's like we've been able to kind of dive into personalities a little bit differently than the books. But all I think a lot of the fans would support this is, you know, we stayed really true to the material and we stayed quite true to who these people are. We've arrived at things somewhat differently. We've gotten from A to B a little bit, you know, I mean, sorry, from A to D, maybe a little bit differently. Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of philosophically where we started, and we kind of maintained that all the way through.
I mean, what's been your favorite part of this season so far?
I think in season one, you know, Leviathan Wakes is a mystery and a conspiracy. So that forces you to write in a particular way where you're kind of constantly hiding the ball or changing an answer or trying to open up another question. And if you keep on doing that, that can get a little bit tiring. I think if you look at conspiracy themed shows, they tend to run out of steam because the only way you can maintain that concept of an ever widening conspiracy is, you know, it's like, it's not the man behind the curtain. It's the man behind the curtain. And then very quickly, your show collapses under the weight of its own plot. The big difference in season two from season one is that we were able to ditch the mystery and ditch the conspiracy. And it was never a question of what's really going on. It was more action and reaction and consequence. And that's planting your show very firmly in forward motion. You're learning as you're going, things are changing, but you don't have to deal with this incredible density of like contradictory explanations and stories, which make it very difficult to follow. So I think that we were able to propel it much better and also dig into our people in a much stronger way. And that's really the plan forward is, you know, you really want to keep deepening the characters because at the end of the day, that's why people come back.
It's interesting to hear you say that that's deliberate, because I was thinking that as the season went on, I was like, wow, you know, people didn't have to dig very hard to find out what Project Caliban was and, you know, that there is a proto-molecule hybrid out there. It's just kind of there. And I was struck by the fact that it wasn't this, you know, we're going to wait 10 episodes to finally reveal what exactly is going on. So that was a deliberate choice with this season.
Yeah, it was. I mean, and again, I think that echoes the books pretty well, too, is I just think that you can frustrate an audience if you do that too much. There's something about it that always seems to end up in bad storytelling where you just kind of keep spinning the wheel. And it just at a certain point, it starts feeling like a gimmick. And, you know, I think, you know, like if you look at, for example, Game of Thrones, the show keeps moving. I mean, it just keeps moving forward. I think, you know, these books do that too. And I think it can be a much more satisfying way to continue to expand the scope of the world and to keep the plot going in interesting and unexpected places. Because the other one gets tired, at least to my taste.
It's interesting you say that, because the first thing I thought of when you specifically just said how, you know, gimmicks and not advancing the plot forward, the first thing I thought of was The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. Because I was so into that show. And then I stopped watching it after, you know, Glenn got killed this season. But
spoilers.
Oh my God,
I'm just
come
kidding.
On.
I'm just
By
kidding.
Now, give me a break. but even last season, I was kind of like, this is, you know, when they did the fake out with Glenn's death.
Yeah.
And a lot of people felt that way. And I honestly got to a point where I'm like, but what's happening? Like, because there's nothing's happening anymore in the story. It's literally like the same kind of dilemma keeps popping up every few weeks or whatever. And I don't feel like there's an end game here anymore.
They feel like they're on a treadmill.
Yeah.
I think at a certain point, it's just a choice to say, no, we're just going to kind of keep it the way it is. And, you know, that's a whole other discussion. I have my whole theory about The Walking Dead
we could talk about that later.
But and then was there anything when you were getting ready to start this whole project, looking, I mean, I guess only speaking through book two, because that's where we are now, that when you were looking at it, you were like, how the hell are we going to pull this off on TV, looking at the books and the story that's there?
You know, I didn't have that feeling. I felt like, you know, as long as the studio was willing to put the money into the show, that it could be done. I mean, I just think that we're at the right time, technologically speaking, to deliver a show like this. I mean, it would always, you know, I always wish there were a little bit more money and a little bit more time. you know, that's sort of television in a nutshell, unless you're doing Game of Thrones, perhaps. I like the challenge of it, to be honest. It's like I've done plenty of big shows, and the small ones, while they can be really interesting, the big ones kind of challenge me more, and I like it. I like just being able to do a kind of a science fiction show that I don't think has ever really been done.
Yeah, someone on Reddit was actually asking about your experience on this versus your experience on Almost Human and how they differed.
Oh, there were chart. Listen, there were many charming things about Almost Human, but I think that show suffered from a lack of narrative cohesion. Everybody seemed to have a different idea what that show wanted to be. Joel Wyman, who created it, you know, wanted to do a serious drama about crime in the future. Warner Brothers wanted sort of like a, you know, an action-y kind of jokey kind of show. And Fox wanted Starsky and Hutch. And I mean, I'm not kidding. We were actually told that. And I actually thought when I heard that, I was like, no, they mean like Starsky and Hutch, right? And no, Starsky and Hutch. It's like, I went back and looked at the episodes. They suck. I mean, it's like, it's horrible. But what happened was that show became a little something of all of those things and never enough of one thing to satisfy anybody. And it's a shame, I mean, because it had so many beautiful elements in it. You know, I thought the pilot was really, really well done. Michael Ealy was an absolute delight. The cast was really good. And so I think that one is a little bit of a missed opportunity, especially because it's rare enough for network television to commit to science fiction in that way. So, you know, this project doesn't have any of those issues. It's like, it's got such a strong narrative. It's got such a strong point of view. Those have never been issues. It's more a question of realizing that and putting that into a serial form where, unlike the books, you're kind of focusing on the main characters all the time. And that's a little bit of a shift as well.
Yeah. Do you prefer a situation like this where you're working from a blueprint? You know, you've got the books that tell a big overarching story already in place and characters drawn out and everything like that?
There's pluses and minuses. I think that, you know, like, for example, Battlestar Galactica, when they were doing that, you know, they didn't have a blueprint. They could take the story where they wanted it to go. And that can be creatively very freeing. It's also, you know, filled with dangerous, you know, cliffs and places that you can go off the rails. And, you know, conversely, when you have a book, you can feel constrained by the plot. But I think that as long as you're aware of it and you can find a balance between new stuff and old stuff, and I've said this many times before, one of the things I really, really enjoy about working with Ty and Daniel is they've never been precious about the novels. They understand it's a different medium, and they understand when it's cool to change things and when, you know, when characters can, several characters can collapse into one, or one character can change in another and allow us to, you know, continue to develop somebody that we already have in the show. Half the time, they're the ones that suggest these things.
As a follow-up to what Noreen was saying, what I wanted to say is that one of the things that we learned working on the show, especially after the first season, is that if you find actors that you really like and that really seem to engage with the material and deliver strong performances, you find yourself wanting to write more stuff for them. So things like giving, you know, if you have a new small part that you can fold into a larger part that you already have with a actor that you really like, you just wind up wanting to do that. You know, we can create a new character and take a chance on getting somebody we like, or we can give all that person's material to somebody we already like and let them do it. And we find ourselves doing a lot of that too.
I have a question, Noreen. I know that you are a Simpsons fan, and that
I am.
You guys hid some Simpsons Easter eggs in the show.
Yes.
And there's one that, is there one that still nobody's found yet? Is that it, Ty?
There's one that no one will ever find.
It's super arcane. It's borderline unfair, actually, in my opinion. But
okay, so it's like, and I know, like Ty said, he'll give an autographed set of the books to whoever gets it right. So do you want to give them at least like somewhat like, okay, it's between this episode and this episode.
Perhaps in the form of a riddle?
Yeah.
Well, hold on a second. I'm going to write something down for Ty and see if it's okay.
Okay. And also, while you're doing that, I also heard that you are as big of an Archer fan as Ty and I are.
Oh, my God. It's the show that has everything.
It's the greatest show ever. So where are the Archer Easter eggs? When are those coming? Because I'm waiting for them.
Archer has everything I could ever want in a show. It's got guns. It's got sex. It's got mid-century modern design. It's got drinking. It's got everything.
It's amazing. Everything. It's got sarcasm.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
It isn't.
They're like, that's not the one. It is.
This is top secret stuff going on.
Even Noreen doesn't know what the Easter egg is.
They were talking about that on Reddit. Like,
which one? Okay, now you have to write it down. Which one are we talking about? Okay, now I thought it was a different. I thought it was a different one.
Daniel finally speaks.
I know the answer.
Oh,
he lives.
That's all right. Well, that's a super.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's super organic.
That's a legit. All right, that's legit. That's a legit Simpsons Easter egg, but it is. Can't we just tell somebody what episode it's in?
No.
How about what, like, give like an range of episodes and don't say from season one, episode one to season 11. Yeah. Don't.
It's in season one.
It's in season one.
It is.
But Noreen thought it was the Busy Batiko, meaning live forever. But somebody on Reddit pointed that out like 10 minutes after the episode came out.
There you go.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
It's that scene where Jules Pierre Mao
actually speaks Basque.
Wow.
Somebody on Reddit who speaks Basque said, oh, Busy Batiko, that means live forever.
That was super arcane.
It's all the scene where Jules Pierre Mao steps on a bunch of rakes, right?
Yes.
We actually, that very, very episode came up recently, and I was in a visual effects review, and it's the scene where it's at the end of episode 11 when they look out the airlock and they see the proto man like staring back, and then he runs off.
That's the episode we're talking about today.
I know, but I was saying that right in the visual effects review, they go, is there anything else you want? And I go, could he step on a rake? And then turn and step on another rake.
Excellent.
Just keep going.
That'd be amazing. But so are we going to get some Archer Easter eggs in season 3?
You know, it's almost impossible not to, just because everyone in our writer's room watches Archer. Yeah. And it comes up so often that somebody's going to sneak something into an episode that is an Archer thing. It's just... There's just no way it won't happen.
Do you know what I would rather have is that there was a great moment years ago on The Office when Rann Wilson's character, he's like they've crashed some like one of their boss's Christmas parties, and they just keep cutting back to him having small talk conversation. And one of those moments is he goes, "Do you watch Battlestar Galactica?" And the guy goes, "No." And he goes, "Then you're an idiot."
Did they crash the party, or they were invited to their CFO's house?
That's right. That's it. They were.
And Dwight's going around like checking the house to make sure it's stable, and he's like on the roof checking like this chimney.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly the episode. But I would like us to be referenced in a show like that. That is what I really hope.
That's
for.
The ultimate. That's the dream right there.
That is the dream. That is the dream.
That's so funny. Now I'm like remembering that entire Office episode.
I just want Patton Oswalt to include us in one of his comedy bits.
That'll happen to him. He's a big fan, right?
Yeah, he is a fan.
Yeah.
Have you guys, is he the biggest celebrity fan that you guys have encountered so far?
Well, George likes us.
Retta from Parks and Rec, she got on board too. She liked that a lot.
Yeah. I actually had mentioned that because we were trying to get Patton, we were trying to see if we can get him on as a guest. And then I had mentioned that Retta also started watching it because of Patton.
We sort of stole the design of our hand terminals from the future Parks and Rec version that's right at the end of the series.
Oh, that's so good.
We were in season one and we were designing how this thing worked, and I was hating everything that I saw, and we were up in Toronto. I was watching watching the season of Parks and Rec, which I adored as a show, and they do this future episode. And they have these little fold-out terminals. And it's like, I go, and I send a clip of it to our visual effects supervisor and go, Ours cannot look shittier than that.
Noreen, every single show that you're saying that you're a fan of are like legitimately my favorite shows. Like Parks and Rec is one of my all-time favorite shows. Archer, obviously. We all of us professed our love for The Good Place like early on in the season, which is also a Mike Schur.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I mean, then you must love Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
I do love Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I stopped watching it though. I'm behind, but I was in. No, there's just so much TV. Like, you know, I can't.
We've traveled far afield. Yeah. From The Expanse.
Impossible to keep up.
Yeah.
It's okay. But,
we have, sorry.
It's quite happens.
But we were talking about Easter eggs. So it's not.
It's true.
It just kind of spun into a direction of a conversation that kind of happens sometimes. it's okay. Is there anything so far that you're bummed out that you haven't been able to do in the show that you wanted to bring up from the books? Like, I know that, you know, we've asked pretty much everyone this at some point.
Yeah.
What they wish, like, you guys could have done, but you couldn't get to do it because of
time or budget or anything.
You know, there's, I would answer it like this. You always want to do it bigger, better, cooler, more spaceships, more battles, more visual effects. I think probably the one thing that I wish we could have done, and honestly, this was like a money decision more than anything, and we just simply were, you know, just not able to really hit it, was the protomolecule battle with Bobby and her team on the surface of Ganymede.
Yeah.
That we weren't really able to do. Now, creatively, we made a choice, and I think in season three, I've got a way to correct it a little bit. But that was one I think that maybe I would have liked to seen a little bit more of. But overall, I think, you know, I think we're getting better at doing weightlessness. I don't know. I tend to look at it as if there's something that we didn't quite do, I'll figure out a way to do it eventually. And we'll always be able to make things better and better as we go.
Can you talk a little bit about the process of pacing the show out versus the books? Because, I mean, it was a pretty...
I was actually going to ask that question.
Yeah, I mean, thinking about season one, right? And you don't know you're going to get a season two at that point when you're launching the show. I mean, obviously, everybody's hopeful, but... and knowing how the decision was made to kind of, okay, we're not going to reach the end of book one by the end of season one, and how things are going to be paced from here, I guess, or how you go about figuring that out.
You know, it's more like instinct than anything else, because I think that when it was, again, at that very first meeting, I came in with sort of a breakdown of what I thought the season would be. And that was it. I said at episode 10, they're leaving Eros. Miller and Holden were getting irradiated. And I felt like that was part of the plan. I mean, if I look back at that document, it actually held up pretty well. That even had the Anubis being pulled up and stuff like that in it. I think it's just you just get a sense of like a pace of a show. And so I know that's a very vague answer, but that's honestly the truth. You just kind of get a sense of it. It's the same thing with how we figured out like where this season would end. It's one of the first things we talk about, you know, where we go like, how far do you think we can get? And you know, same thing that we're doing now in season three is like the very first conversations. It's like, how far do you think we can get? And I think once you make that decision, it allows you to look at, you know, the material in a slightly different way, because the pace starts beginning to dictate itself in a sense. I know this is super vague. I'm sorry. It just sounds...
No, it's fine.
I mean, it's just, was there pushback from the network or from anyone to be like, no, you have to get through book one in season one, or is that just everybody's kind of like on board from the beginning?
Yeah, there was. There was definitely pushback because they didn't, they thought the season wasn't complete. That was deliberate. You know, if you got to the end of Leviathan's Wakes, it's just an ending. Our feeling was that, you know, if we got to where we got, then it was all in anticipation. Like, what's happening in this place? You know, what is, it's like, it makes you want to come back to another season as opposed to going, oh, that was a nice story. We're done with that. And then just not show up again. I think that's what, you know, that's what great television does, is like when you're just sitting there going, wow, I wonder what's going to happen next. I have to see.
And obviously, I mean, this is kind of a question for all three of you guys. Ty and Daniel are still writing books. in this series, and I'm guessing that the next one won't be the last one. So,
well, no, you said you guys were going to do 9 books.
Yeah.
You?
So, do you guys have? Is this kind of the, you know, HBO with George R. R. Martin thing where you know what the end is and you know how to plot that out for your show?
Yeah, but I think the difference.
We actually outlined all 9 books while we were writing book 2. So we've known for years where this was all going. And the people in the writer's room know quite a lot of it, you know, because we've been forthcoming with them on where it's going, because, you know, that also helps head off, you know, missteps where they're like, oh, we could do this. And it's like, yeah, but that, you know, destroys the storyline of the last 4 books. That kind of stuff. So, you know, I mean, they, Noreen and Mark and Hawk and the other writers in the room pretty much have a pretty good idea where this is going.
So do you have an idea of how many seasons of the show you would need to tell that story?
All of them. All the,
all
seasons.
The seasons.
All the seasons.
Give us all the seasons.
That's when
there's
he,
a version
speaks.
Of this you can tell in 7 seasons, I think.
Okay.
I think that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
And I've already promised that if we do get 7 seasons, I'm paying for the wrap party.
There you go. Yeah.
He'll be able to afford a very good one.
Yeah. And you fly out the podcast hosts, of course, for the wrap party. And, right? Crickets.
Yeah, no, there will be no press at this party.
Oh, I see.
We're not press.
Yes, we are. We're hard-hitting
Jared,
journalists.
You can come as a waiter.
Oh, snap.
Oh.
No comment.
It just dropped by 10 degrees in this studio, by the way. I just want you guys to know that.
Well, I assume Cher would be there because she's going to be married to Steven by then.
And I will be stalking Steven, so it all, you know. I'll be on the outside. I'll be just outside.
Wind up there.
Yeah. I absolutely hate both of you.
In fairness, I'm not going to be at that party because it's going to be on a yacht, and I can't do those.
This is why Daniel's my favorite.
There you go.
I'll be in a coffee shop someplace.
He'll be like hawking up along somewhere.
Fine. I'll be in a little sanatorium by the sea, trying not to die of consumption. It'll be great.
This is quite a scenario.
I know. That got dark fast.
Waves crashing against the rocks, a cliff face, and yeah.
It's like he just watched Logan.
I'll just be drunk.
That's the easy answer.
I think that
Which
pretty
makes
much
it different from today. How?
I know, right?
So Noreen, we do something called shout outs at the end of every podcast.
Well, wait, I actually have one more question.
I asked you if you had any
more questions.
I thought
question. You meant
you
from Reddit specifically. I'm sorry.
Gosh,
no, this is my own
you.
Personal question for Noreen.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
Sorry.
What's your experience been like with the Expanse fandom? Obviously, it's got a very vocal, very passionate fan base. You can see it on Reddit. Have you had a lot of contact with fans of the show and what that's been like for you?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, we do the live tweets every episode. It's kind of amazing. And it's one of the things I've been noticing this year when you read, like, the reviews of the episode, whether it's AV Club or Den of Geek or any of these guys, it's like they get everything. I mean, everything that we're doing. And it's kind of nice to see that, you know, just because it's an intricate show and it's pretty dense. When you see that people are understanding the themes and how things interconnect, it's kind of like, wow, people really are watching and paying attention. You know, the response in the scientific community has been really great. And, you know, we definitely seem to have struck a chord there as well, which is fun. I mean, I like that with my own background. I like seeing that because I think science fiction is really one of those great, you know, stimulators of imagination for people who are scientifically and engineeringly, is that a word?
Sure.
Bent.
Aren't you an engineer?
it's a technical
but,
term.
Aren't you also like a writer? Like, what's up with that?
What's up with that?
What are words?
I'm a retired engineer. I think the fans have been awesome. And we just want to get more people to the show to watch it on air so we can make more of them. That's really the key. And you know, I know that's tough, especially in a day when it's just so much more fun to like save up 4 of them or watch them all together at once. Especially a show like this.
What's the experience like for you when someone's like, by the way, Jupiter was facing the wrong way when that scene took place on Ganymede? Does that burn you up, or are you just kind of like,
we just blame Bob.
Yeah, exactly.
We do that a lot, actually. actually, there's a sequence in 211 that I'm writing a little something up for Ty and Daniel to put on the James S.A. Corey blog about one of the times we didn't quite get things right, or maybe that's a nice way to put it, since we got it somewhat spectacularly wrong.
Biffed that one.
You know, when people point out things like that, I go, all right, you know, I get a little irritated that we didn't catch it. Sometimes you can fix it, but we certainly fix things going forward. You know, if we're going to take the bows for getting the science right, then we better take the lumps when we get it wrong. And then just try not to get it wrong.
I have one more question. Are we going to see any official Expanse merch?
No, never.
We are trying. We the people at our studio have said that this is definitely a priority for them. So hopefully that will be coming soon. Believe me, I would love nothing better than to have an amazing die-cast metal model of the Rossi and of Bobby's armor. I think that would be incredible. And I would love to get something into the hands of the fans.
I think there need to be Funko pop vinyls of the crew.
And the proto-molecule hybrid.
And the proto-molecule hybrid.
Yeah, I want a cute little proto-molecule hybrid on my desk.
this is pretty. These are all good ideas. These are all really good ideas.
And we have a board game coming out.
Well, I know.
That's right.
And there has to be bobbleheads of Ty and Daniel.
No. Terrible plan.
They would be indistinguishable from the real thing.
If they gave us a lot of money, we could just put them in the writer's room.
That's true.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay, so now let's do our shout-outs. So, Noreen, you can stay with us for this. We basically just shout out anything that we're into in the past week. It doesn't have to be genre related. It could be anything. So Ty or Daniel, do one of you guys want to start?
I'm going to start. I'm going to give a shout out to my beloved CSI pinball machine because I'm finally back in the room. I have access to the machine again. I plan to waste a lot of time that they're paying her in here playing this pinball machine and bugging Noreen.
He is referring to my beloved CSI pinball machine. So that's just a clear.
When I'm here, it's mine.
Does it have a special hacking mode where two people are typing on a keyboard at the same time?
No, that was NCIS.
Oh, dang it. Sorry. I got
Thank you.
I got my acronyms wrong.
If Noreen had ever worked on an episode where that happened, he would have killed everyone involved.
What about you, Daniel?
This is this really obscure book that I'm going to talk about. It's called Powers of Darkness. What happened was in 1900, an Icelandic publisher got the rights to Dracula and translated it into I'm not even sure what the language was, but it was taken out of English and reworked as a book called Machtmyrkranna, and now has been retranslated back into English. So it's an entirely different version of Dracula that has been fed through a different language and two different translators. And is apparently shorter and punchier and more erotic and more interesting than the original cut. And since everything I'm doing right now is about genre fiction and translation, it's been really fascinating for me.
Wow. All right. And I'll give a shout out to an article I read recently in the Atlantic Monthly called How Aristotle Created the Computer. And it's a fascinating tracing of the foundations of mathematical logic all the way from Aristotle through Euclid to Claude Shannon and Alan Turing and the foundation of modern computing. It was pretty incredibly fascinating.
All right, cool. Go ahead, Adam.
Oh, and my shout out is to the Weeping Somnambulist, which was name dropped in this episode. I forgot to mention that. That's my favorite word.
Yes.
So I just wanted to shout out the Somnambulist.
That doesn't count. So I'm going to take two shout outs. Because I have two things to shout out, and they're both equally awesome, and I can't choose one. The first thing that I want to shout out is I went to a screening last night for the movie Colossal, and it is so good. Everybody who has the opportunity to see it, I don't know how wide of a release it's going to get because it's kind of an indie genre film. But if you have the opportunity to see it, definitely see it as Anna Hathaway and Jason Sudeikis. And it's such an original idea.
I've heard about that one.
It's really, really good. It's very, very good. So I'm going to shout that out. And my other shout out is I am obsessed right now with Into the Badlands. So I'm shouting that out.
I really need to watch that show because I'm a fan of fight choreography, and I've heard that it's really, really
ridiculous.
Good.
Ridiculous.
Especially for the TV level.
Yeah,
show.
I seriously cannot say it enough. Like, if for any reason you didn't see the first season, it's a very quick 6-season binge watch on Netflix. And
wait, 6 episodes.
Binge watch on Netflix. And then we're in the second season now, so it's going to be the 3rd episode. And it's just so good that I cannot stop shouting it out. I'm pretty sure I shouted it out last week too.
Yeah.
I don't care because I really want everybody to watch it.
Then we need one more collective shout out for the new season of Archer starting on April 5th.
Yes.
Right. All right.
I think we have an interview that's going to be going live soon with Aisha Tyler.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If Aisha is listening to this, call me.
That's why I brought it up.
She was great. She hosted the Magician's podcast.
He knows. Oh, he knows.
Panel at New York Comic Con.
He knows.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
He was feeling some kind of way about that. He was so mad.
She is fantastic. We had her briefly on CSI for a season and was woefully underused in her time there. And I couldn't be happier for her on Archer. And we adore that show.
Yeah,
adore it.
That show's it gives me life. So really, one more last thing. On a scale, we have 2 episodes left after this episode.
That's right.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, how insane are these next 2 episodes going to get?
3.7.
All right.
And on that note.
No.
Way to sell your show, guys.
Incorrect. There's some pretty fucking cool shit coming up.
Sweet.
All right. Okay.
And some gigantic big moments. I don't know. Have people figured out where we're going to end the season yet?
I don't think so.
No. There's a lot of speculation about that online.
I'm avoiding that because I haven't read, so I don't know. But all right. So thanks, guys, for, again, taking time out of your incredibly busy schedule right now. And thank you, Noreen, for joining us. And to everybody listening, you know, you can go ahead and leave us some love on iTunes or on Google Play or Stitcher, wherever you're listening to the podcast. If you have any questions or comments, you can tweet them at us at Sci-Fi Wire. And we'll see you guys next week.